Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and let's start today with a simple question. Is there room for the middle class in Boston? I mean, really, is there room for them as a functioning, vital part of the city? Now, of course, the middle class is an economic group, it's a state of mind, it's a political entity, and that's the reason why it feels like everyone is talking about how to bolster the middle class. For example, here's just last month, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh in his second inaugural address.
As you know, my parents came here as immigrants with next to nothing. My father got a job helping to build Boston's growing skyline. He and my mother were able to make a home to raise their two sons to dream even bigger dreams. That's the kind of progress a strong middle class provides. Not just security for those who are already comfortable, but opportunity for all those who need it. My greatest concern for our city's future is that we could lose this engine of upward mobility.
And Mayor Walsh pledged that in his second term, he will address the, quote, fundamentals of middle class opportunity, meaning housing and schools. But enter Tom Keene, because he recently said, quote, forget it, Mayor. That's what he wrote in the Boston Globe. Tom Keene added that cheap housing and good schools aren't going to happen in Boston. And he even dares ask if that's necessarily a bad thing, meaning, back to that original question, is there room for the middle class in Boston? Well, Tom Keene joins us now. He's in Washington today, and I should also mention that he's a former Boston City Councilor and a frequent contributor to WBUR as well. Tom, it's great to have you.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Okay, so I'm going to beat the hornet's nest a little bit more here in just a second. But before I do that, let me also introduce Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor, currently a special advisor to the Somerville nonprofit called Parenting Journey. He's also with us to have this discussion. Tito Jackson, it's good to see you again.
Tom, I showered today for you. And so I don't know why you weren't in the room with me.
We shall come together.
We're not talking the shower room.
Vicariously here. Okay, so Tom, make the argument. Your Globe article in the Globe magazine really caught my attention because it's super provocative. Make your argument here. Are you saying that there isn't room or there shouldn't be room for a middle class in Boston?
Well, I'm simply trying to address the facts, which is that and when we talk about middle class, let's sort of talk a little bit in stereotypes here. Really, I think what Walsh was talking about was the example of his family, which is two parents and two children. And that's kind of the model that he's holding up. He'd love to see that kind of middle class family back in Boston. And my argument basically is that that's not going to happen, that the cost of housing in Boston is such that middle-class families of that size cannot literally afford to live in Boston, and they get pushed out to the suburbs. And the second component to that, quite frankly, is that Boston's school system, its public school system, ranks really, really low in terms of public school systems across the state. And that, too, drives parents out. They'll go to places like they'll go to the West, they'll go to Natick, they'll go to Framingham, they'll go to the boroughs, they'll go down to Quincy, but they will go out of Boston so they can afford a place to live. Now, one can argue, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Sometimes I think when you look at phenomena like this, it's enough to say it's a thing. It is something that's going on. And I don't see how you change it absent, you know, dramatic things like, you know, compelling builders to build 3-bedroom homes and not allowing them to charge more than $200,000 or something like that, something that never would happen.
Okay. So let me just jump in here. Tito Jackson. So Tom is saying he's just sort of laying out what he sees as facts on the ground right now in Boston. So
first off, I think Tom is abdicating our responsibilities as elected officials to actually put forward a plan. So the mayor of the city of Boston actually controls this organization called I call it the BRA, and when Tom was there, it was called the BRA. So I'm going to call it the BRA today. It's now called the BPDA. So the city of Boston actually has a planning organization that actually is able to guide us in this space. And Tom is also not acknowledging the fact that the Boston Public Schools, in terms of large cities in the country is actually a pretty good school system. Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. And by the way, I would say that we need to invest in our public schools. But Boston ranks fourth in the nation in reading scores and eighth. Number one in the nation in fourth grade reading and eighth grade math scores for these large public districts. So we do pretty well in that space. And one of the ways that we actually do better is to take the revenue that we're getting from all of these million-dollar condos, and instead of plowing it into things like General Electric, instead of plowing it in things like Olympics, instead of plowing it in things like IndyCar, to actually put those dollars back into the Boston public schools. Because as Tom noted in his article, it's $20,000, $30,000 a year for private education. We can change the outcomes relative to the Boston public schools.
So let me just jump back in here. First of all, I want to open the phones. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And get a sense as to what folks out there listening feel. I mean, you just heard Tito Jackson respond to Tom Keene's article, this idea that maybe structurally there isn't room for a thriving middle class in Boston. And I want to know your reaction to that. Again, 1-800-423-8255. Or 1-800-423-TALK, or, you know, if you're more digitally inclined, you can send me a tweet at Radio Boston. So, Tom, just building off what Tito was saying, here's the thing. Like, right now, we were looking at some numbers, because you used a definition of the middle class that is between, what, earning between $35,000 per household.
And there's many different definitions out there.
Yeah. But regardless...
The higher numbers for a larger household size.
Yeah. And so the city of Boston says middle class, they call it between 50 and 125. Okay.
Okay.
Regardless of how you kind of cut that pie, we're still... You know, we're looking at census data. We're still talking roughly 35% of the city today. I mean, within those parameters that we just laid out, that's a third. It's a third of the people we're talking about. You can't just say that, like, policy wise, we can give up on providing this giant chunk of folks great housing and great schools.
So it really isn't a third. I mean, if many of those are singles and couples who would be defined as middle class, but not with children. Okay, so I think what we are talking here, because Marty Walsh was the one who interjected the notion of schools here, we really are talking about families with children, middle class families with children. The phenomenon that's gone on in Boston, and to be frank, in a lot of other cities in America, is that cities which were once in the complete doldrums, say in the early 1980s, when people with money would flee cities, and Boston indeed fell to its lowest point of population ever, cities have suddenly become really popular places to live. And people are flocking back into them. There's this new urbanist phenomenon. And the people that you see flocking back into them, however, are young people, singles, highly educated people. That's what the demand is for.
Okay,
the phenomenon I see is that these people come in, they couple up, and they stay in Boston until they have children, and that's when economics in the schools drives
them
up.
I'm not quibbling with sort of the trend that we're seeing now. But what I'm saying, and Tito, I'm going to turn this to you. You know, I think Tom is actually kind of describing a little bit of what is indeed going on. But when it comes to what do we want to have happen, I feel like there's no better way to create a vibrant city than to support exactly these families with children, because they are the most involved. Amongst the most involved of any kind of citizen you could have.
So the Boston public school system is actually not going down. It's actually going up in terms of the actual numbers. So we are seeing increases in the Boston public schools with high demand in the K-0, which is 3-year-olds, K-1, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds time frame. So one of the things that we, again, need, and by the way, we have some of the best early education programs in the United States of America, bar none. In addition, though, we have policies that can fix some of the things that Tom is bringing up. In Cambridge has mandated 20% affordable housing when someone builds over 10 units. That is a policy-based issue that is being enforced right next to the city of Boston in the city of Cambridge.
But when we say affordable, I mean, does that equate to middle
class? But affordable is not middle
class. Yeah.
That's the problem, Tito. Affordable is, by definition, not middle class.
Well, I guess... So let's go there. 50% of people in Boston make $35,000 or less. So my issue is simply this middle class. Because by the way, many folks that I know who make a couple $300,000-$400,000 think they're middle class. That it becomes a misnomer. The city of Boston is strong and should be strong because it's a city that supports poor people, supports middle-class people, and supports those who are affluent. When we look at the economic structure of the city of Boston, the real estate market can't be the only driving factor because we do education, medication, we do meds here, and we do tech. We need workers here that are close enough to the city of Boston to actually support the economy in which we're talking about. So that becomes another issue about the future of the city of Boston.
I mean, the mayor would say he's doing that, right? The 50,000 units he wants to build by 2030.
Well, but we can't have a trickle-down economic theory. You can't just say, and I think I agree with Tom here around, what do we just say if we say housing? Well, housing, just without any restrictions, are market rate housing. Which, and I believe in his story, he said for one bedrooms, he's talking about 2,800, which is even higher than what I had been quoting of 2,300. I might be a little bit behind on that. So we need to make sure that we're building housing that is affordable to people. So there are also places like Vancouver who've instituted flipping taxes.
Right.
And so they are using market-based theory to actually get some of the dollars that we need. People putting restrictions on Airbnb. There are things that
we're starting to see some of that here.
Yes.
So there are ideas. I just want to jump in here and let Tom back in. I mean, your thoughts, your reactions to what Tito's saying.
So we can
create the engine of ideas to support a middle class here.
Right. And I think we hit on Tito's numbers, 50% making $50,000 or less. That is not middle class. Okay, that is really not a middle class definition. And I agree with you that those are the people that public policy should focus upon. Those are the people who are in most need. Those are the people at the lowest end of the economic spectrum. What I have a hard time seeing, Tito, is how we start then doing subsidies, let's say, for people who are decidedly in the middle class, for whom market rate housing, say, in the suburbs is eminently affordable. And the problem we have, and we can try to compel them to stay or think of subsidies to have them stay in Boston, but when the price per square foot of housing is half in the suburbs versus what it is in Boston, those numbers, that economics is going to drive people out.
But the question is, what is progress? And if we say making a street better, I want to make that street better with the people who live in those same houses being able to do better for themselves and their families. What you're talking about is actually having the people in those houses leave, being replaced by another group of people, and then we all define that street or neighborhood or community as better. I think it's critical that we not allow this to become a foregone conclusion. We need to hold elected officials accountable. We need to hold our policymakers accountable to make sure that they're fighting the fight for the people who are here. This is, and our city is planning for Amazon, right? Mm. So we get all up in arms for people who haven't come here yet. We owe it to the people of the city of Boston and the neighboring communities to actually fight the good fight here for good education, for good quality housing in and around the city of Boston, and to plan for and actually implement policies that help the poor people. And we actually need to look at our bounce. How do we become the most mobile city in the United States of America?
Tom, I'm going to give you another shot here, because then imagine this. There are people who have called in who want to have a say, too. But
this
go
is
ahead.
Not a controversial issue at all.
No, not controversial at all. So let me just use my personal example. I raised my kids in the city. The place we raised them was a condo. It cost $500,000 when we bought it. Okay, that place now is valued at $2.5 million. Now, unfortunately,
do you still own it?
No, regrettably not. But it's valued at $2.5 million. I could not afford to buy that place. I don't know how we change that dynamic, but the price of housing has increased so dramatically in Boston, and I guess I don't understand. Aside from saying we should change it, which I agree, but should be a great thing to do. I don't understand the how of it. I don't understand what we can do to bring that $2.5 million place back to a half
million. But Tom, you know, I just going back to what you wrote in the Globe, you do ask, you know, if this is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, this is you. The virtue of the rich is that they tend to demand less in the way of city services, but have the means to pay a lot in taxes. And those taxes, in turn, power a city budget that allows you to focus on other residents.
And I think that goes back to Tito's point, which is with half of Boston basically below middle class, those people are benefiting from the taxes paid by the rich people who live in Boston. And I think that's a good thing. I think that those people who are below the middle class are the ones who need the attention of public policymakers.
Okay, so hang on here, Tito. I know you want to come back in here, but we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm speaking with Tom Keene and Tito Jackson about this provocative question that Tom Keene raised in the Boston Globe magazine about whether or not Boston can support a thriving middle class. Again, we're at 800-423-8255. Call in and let me know. Look, I've got some tweets here. This is Magpie Williams saying, the trend we're seeing now has been forced on many families, that many in the middle class were forced out to the suburbs of the last 12 years because they couldn't get a school placement or because they couldn't find affordable housing. So so that perspective we've heard here. But let's turn to the phones. Chuck is calling from Worcester. You're on the air, Chuck.
Yeah, I just have one question for these gentlemen. Don't we have to change the way we fund the city budget from using real estate taxes to another source of revenue?
Because the main source of the revenue is the property taxes. That leads us to wanting to build higher, more expensive housing. Yeah,
that's the rub. Exactly. That's where the rub is. So they have to find another way to fund the city budget.
Chuck, interesting question. Let me get
it's an interesting question, but I would note that one of the things that Boston has is lower real estate taxes on residential property than most of the surrounding suburbs. That actually is one of the few significant financial advantages that Boston provides to its residents. I think what Boston really tries to encourage is the development of industry downtown, because that really is what can really pay a lot more in the way of taxes.
The interesting thing is that we've actually done pretty well in that space recently. Last year, over $140 million increase year over year in net revenue. And this year, you're going to see a 7% increase in revenue from real estate taxes. The question is, on the other side, where do they spend this money? Mm. Why are we not investing in the public school system? Why is it that not every Boston public school student is taking a computer science class like they do in San Francisco? Because if we're going to bring Amazon.com or any of these .coms here, we need to make sure that our young people are qualified and ready to go.
Can I just jump in there about schools, Tito? Because it's a really important point. And this is Tom. You have a provocative paragraph after paragraph, and I want to get Tito's response to this. Because Tom Keene writes in the Globe that the mayor promises to improve schools, and this is Tom writing, but as you know, the crying need is not for more classrooms catering to middle-income white kids. It's for stepped-up services for the least well-off, and it's hard to imagine a political environment where you, that being the mayor, or the city would favor the better-off at the expense of those in need.
What I'm saying is that there's 58,000 students in the Boston public school system. Over 80% of them are students of color, and we need to make sure, and most of them are poor. And by the way, they're 100% of the future of the city of Boston. And we need to make sure places like Madison Park, which the budget has been cut, that's our vocational school. So if we're going to build stuff, we need people to actually help with that. If there's people on the line who are listening, if you're part of the business community, we want to build a relationship with you with Madison Park. Every young person in the city of Boston should step on a college campus before they graduate middle school. And they should also have, I believe, state-of-the-art access to buildings that are not as old as they are, right? Yeah. So two-thirds of buildings in the city of Boston, two-thirds of our school buildings are built before 1945.
So you're saying we have the means, we just have to spend it in different
places.
Called,
and the question is, do we have the will?
Okay. So I want to go back to the phones here, Tom, but I do want to just kind of like not dance around a particular issue and just ask you straight up. I mean, are you really talking about a white middle class here in Boston? Is that what we're talking about?
No, I really don't think I am talking about that. But I think, to put it in provocative terms, that would be the kind of group that people would see had left the city. In fact, middle class families of all races have left the city. And presumably you want to try to bring them, or the mayor presumably wants to try to bring all of those folks back. What I have a hard time seeing, though, is spending money on those middle-class folks to the disfavor of the children in greatest need. As Tito just pointed out, the kids in the public schools right now really do need those schools, and they come from lower economic circumstances. That is where we should spend our money. He and I do not disagree about that. What I am questioning is, do we also try to spend money to build schools that look like suburban schools so we can attract back those suburban families? I don't think so.
So I guess my only question would be, the schools that look like suburban schools, are we talking about the physical infrastructure, or are we talking about
who goes to those schools?
We have, I believe, a very rich diversity in the Boston public schools. And, you know, we've had to deal with issues such as hopefully having sanctuary schools and protecting young people from ICE and all the like. But when it comes down to it, what I would submit to you is that if Boston public schools can help the young people who are already in them, then more and more middle-class families are going to come back based on the graduation rates, persistence rates, which is the rate at which they graduate college. That's what we should actually be pushing for. So the better we do for those poor kids, yeah, the better we do for everybody else.
So I want to get some folks who are living in the city to or around Greater Boston to have their say. So let's roll through a bunch of calls, okay? So let's first go to Eric, who's calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Eric.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Real quick, I just want to comment. So I work in the city, and the nature of my work takes me to, you know, every nook and cranny of the city, South Boston, North Boston. And over the past year and a half or so, the explosion of high-end apartment living, it's being put up at a rate that's crazy. And me, myself, middle class, me and my fiance, and we just had a son born in November, when we were looking for housing, there's just no way on a middle-class income that you could afford that. You're going to end up spending, you know, 50% of your income,
yeah,
just on rent alone, you know, never mind utilities, food, and all the expenses that come with kids. But just from what I've seen and having such in-depth observation on a daily basis being around the city, yeah, I mean, it's really gentrification at its finest. I mean, like Tito said, it's making it all look nicer, but at what cost?
Mm.
You know, by pushing out other people. So I'll leave you with that. I just want to comment.
Eric, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate your view there. Let's go to Erica, who's calling from Wellesley. Erica, you're on the air. Hi, Erica. Are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to bring up rent control. I know that when rent control was taken away for referendum, the housing prices went up and have continued to go up. So I wanted to know if it was possible for us to have another voter referendum or ballot question to bring rent control back the same way that it was taken away. And I also wanted to note that one of the problems is that we have a huge percentage of nonprofits like hospitals and colleges, and they don't pay the same types of taxes as other businesses. And many, like Harvard, which has the largest endowment in the world, don't even pay the requested payment in lieu of taxes.
Right. So those pilot payments. So interesting. Erica, thank you so much. Tito and Tom, let me turn back to you. So it feels like people are saying, hey, look, there are untapped wells here that we could go to. Why aren't we?
So I'm not sure how I see the untapped wells. I fully agree you should have pilot payments, okay? I think that I don't think that rent control is going to be coming back to Boston, and I don't think it was a good thing. I mean, what it did is it actually depressed development within the city.
It had lots of problems.
Right. I think that when you raise additional taxpayer dollars and spend additional taxpayer dollars, that should be spent on the people in greatest need. And that is not the middle class. And that's why the middle class are going to go out, because the housing is not affordable within Boston. So they go outside of Boston. If we wanted to try to keep the middle class in, I could envision someone saying, well, let's actually subsidize their housing. But that has to come at some cost to other groups, the groups that really deserve the money from new taxes, say pilot programs, are those who are not middle class but are below middle
class. Tom, I have to say, intellectually, I hear what you're saying, but in my soul, the image that pops up is like, do we want to be San Francisco? Or Tito, I'm going to steal a line from you. Do we want to be like just the seaport and some of the most impoverished neighborhoods? I mean, like, I can't imagine a vibrant city being just those two tent poles.
Yeah, and Do we want to, or is it simply that that's what we're going to be?
And well, that's my a argument terrible here, future.
But I don't know if it's that terrible.
But I think it's a terrible future, and I think it's a terrible future for all of those folks who stayed when others left. So this is the other piece, too. There are people who stayed in the city of Boston, who didn't move out of the city of Boston, and actually fought to make sure it was safer, to make sure it was cleaner, and now people want to come back. And we love those folks who are coming back, but we also have to fight for those folks who are here. Around the issue of pilot payments, I believe, because understand, 50% of pilot payments can be paid in kind, right? So that's, I think we need to look at that and determine whether or not colleges, universities, and hospitals are doing what they need to do to put more money out there. I also think that we need to be thinking about very creative rent stabilization strategies that are going to work and persist into the future.
So Tom, I mean, hearing everything that Tito just said, I'm going to come back to what you said. You're not sure it's such a terrible future?
Well, I suppose that if I were to write a storybook, I would say my ideal storybook neighborhood would be one where you have people of all economic classes living on the same street side by side, each with a backyard and also, you know, an urban mall right next door to them and restaurants and things like that. I just don't see that storybook being possible. And I hear it politically from people like Tito and from Mayor Walsh saying they want to get there. I don't see how they get there. I think that the economics really drives the other way. And I don't see that reversing.
My life in public service is about helping people who need not a handout, but simply a hand up. And that's what we should be all about. And I know this is why you do this work. I am unwilling to write this thing off. I don't want to be San Francisco, right? One, we have a winning football team, so I'm not even gonna go on it. But I don't want to be San Francisco. I want to be Boston. And Boston is edgy. We've had that piece of being able to fight and work our way up. And also, to your point, the street you want to live on, I want it to be a multiracial, multi-ethnic street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
I agree.
Okay.
And it's an ideal. I just do not see that ideal. And unfortunately, Tito, I do think we're going the way of San Francisco, Seattle, and a host of other cities.
Wow. Oh. Okay.
Sorry about that, Magda.
I constantly on this show look for ideas and uplift. And Tom, here you come with this gritty realism. No, I'm not going to stop fighting the good fight on this. Tom Keene, former Boston City Councilor and Boston Globe and WBUR frequent contributor. We've got a link to Tom's provocative article. It's at our website, radioboston.org. Great to have you, Tom. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Tito Jackson, former Boston City Councilor and currently a special advisor to the Somerville nonprofit Parenting Journey. Tito Jackson, thank you so very much.
And I want to get the frequent contributor title, too.
Okay, come on. I think we have to have like a punch card. And then when you do 10, get one free.
Awesome.
Well, that's what we're doing. And folks, I think you should go to our website, radioboston.org, and let us know what you think about whether or not a vibrant middle class is a realistic future for the city of Boston. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.